The most dangerous phrase in our language is we've always done it this way.
There are an awful lot of posers out there. People that do lean because they're mandated to do it. They think it will work.
How stable are you today? What are your goals? Are you generating small, simple improvements?
There are very few people that embrace lean with their full heart, head, and emotion.
Let's imagine that your current output is top-notch. Is that enough to stop innovating and stop reaching for more?
Patrick's book uncovers the essence of what those organizations look like and what the posers look like. Caution, are you in the fake zone or the real zone?
Order your copy today at avoidcontinuousappearance.com. All right. Hello, everybody. We have the privilege of talking with Karen Martin today. Karen is a two-time Shingo Research Award winning author, speaker, and consultant. So welcome, Karen.
Hi, Patrick. Nice to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you. I've been following you for quite a while, and I love all the amazing stuff that you put out there on social media and obviously just the amazing work that you do as a speaker and as a consultant. So I'm excited to have you on the show.
Ditto. I love your posts as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But as a two-time Shingo Research Award winning author, you've written a number of books, but your latest book is Clarity First. So I'm excited to hear a little bit more about this, because I think for a lot of our listeners that are in leadership positions, or maybe not even in a leadership role, but just listening in and looking for opportunities to develop themselves, clarity is something that we need to think about as leaders. And so I'm excited to kind of dive into that. Can you tell us a little bit about the book itself?
Yeah, I'd love to. So it was born when two books before that was The Outstanding Organization. And that's organized around four principles or conditions that I feel are critical for outstanding performance of any sort in any kind of walk of life. Clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. And what I didn't anticipate was the amount of emotional reaction I got to the clarity chapter. Mm. And, people were just writing and calling and asking about, they didn't realize the degree to which their organization didn't operate with clarity and how much that was weighing them and their teams down.
Sure.
And so I decided, maybe I should do a deeper dive into just this subject, thinking it was going to be an easier book to write. Clarity it's just so fascinating how complex it is and how fleeting it is. Mm. When you start kind of getting the clarity bug and start paying really close attention to it, there's not a whole lot of clarity consistently pretty much anywhere in life.
Sure.
And when it is present, it's just so helpful and uplifting. And even if it's negative information and not so easy to hear, clarity is liberating because it gives you power to decide what to do in a way that you don't have when you don't know the truth or you're not clear about the situation.
Sure.
So it's I'm pretty high on the subject.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm excited. And I have to be honest, I haven't read the book yet. So that's why I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit more about it so that I can dive into it myself. But for those that are listening in that maybe are a little unclear or don't have clarity around clarity, can you help us define the word clarity? What do you mean when you say clarity?
Yeah, I mean, that actually was one of the most vexing challenges of writing the book, was just defining it. It was very interesting. So what I finally landed on, it's just the essence of anything being easily and accurately understood. So easily understood is the main thing,
okay.
But it has to be accurate information that someone is getting in order for it to be, actionable and being able to do anything. It's in emails, conversations, reports, prioritization plans, it's in any walk of life, a customer requirements documents, just being very, very clear. The opposite of clarity, in my view, is ambiguity. And ambiguity is both, you can see it, you can feel it. And interestingly, you can feel clarity and feel ambiguity. And when you just get that kind of, I don't understand, what's that mean? That is pretty much a clue that ambiguity is present. And clarity is just like you know what to do, or you at least know what your options are to explore. to get somewhere.
Sure.
And so it's an easier path to accomplishing anything.
Mm.
And, you know, the way I started digging into clarity is like, well, what are the essential elements of it, or what are the aspects of it? So to me, there's an element of precision.
Mm-hmm.
So that the information that you're receiving is precise. That way you don't have to guess and, you know, figure out what to do with it. It's coherent, meaning that, you know, it kind of hangs with everything else around whatever that thing is that you're communicating about. And there's not that, you know, kind of head scratching, huh, that doesn't, but that doesn't line up with this, you know? So there's some congruence to it, and it's elegant, meaning that, you know, people are using the, actually one of my high school teachers, English teachers that taught me how to write, frankly, she had this saying, the height of the English language is expressing the most thought in the fewest words.
Mm.
And I just really love that because, and I'm a fan of Hemingway as a, you know, as far as the plethora of novelists I've read, you know, he also had this just very succinct thing. And I think I gravitate toward it also, just being from Pittsburgh, it's a pretty, Pittsburgh is interesting. It gets a little Brooklyn, a little Long Island,
mm-hmm.
a little in your face sometimes. But, you know, frankness and candor and brevity and getting to the point and getting things done, that's kind of the environment I grew up in.
Sure.
So I think it's a natural love of clarity and getting to the truth.
Okay. So in your experience, how many leaders do you think out there are making decisions when they don't have clarity? I mean, do you think it's pretty high on the radar?
It's a pretty common disease, mm-hmm. and it is a common human disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's two things I talk about in the book. One is, you know, conveying information, and the one being a recipient of information.
Right.
And they require different thought patterns in order to be really good at being a champion of clarity. You know, when you're a conveyor of information, you know thy audience is so critical, and yet people don't always think about that. It needs to become a conscious thing that you think about before you shoot off an email or have a conversation, pick up the phone, get on a Zoom session, whatever it might be. You know, how do I need to speak with this person in order for them to understand the message I want to give? And we're all selling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We all are selling our ideas. We're selling an approach we want to take, an improvement we want to make, whatever it might be. So in order to get people to buy, you know, it has to be in their language.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and this book, by the way, is not just a communications book. It kind of sounds that way, the way we're talking, but it's really about business performance improvement
mm-hmm.
and clarity at all levels in order to achieve that.
Sure.
So that to me is, it's critical as a conveyor of information to be thinking of. As a receiver of information, it gets actually quite emotional. And I dug into a lot of research around what makes people not seek clarity when they receive an ambiguous message, and it's pretty laced in fear. It's laced in historical, you know, being told, you know, well, actually I even had a situation with an early boss in my career that I'll never forget. My second performance review, she said to me, all right, I'm going to start off this way. Karen Martin, you have a high need to know.
Hmm.
And I took it in a very negative way. You know, it sounded negative. Her tone was negative. I think she meant it negative. And it shaped the degree to which I sought clarity for a while mm-hmm. until I finally realized that I don't think that I had as much of a high need to know. I think she had a real low need to share,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a low need to be clear. And I think she was protecting herself by not putting it out there and being crisp and clear on her beliefs or even the assignments we were being given.
Sure.
So I do think leaders suffer from it a lot and don't realize they're suffering from it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think when leaders are suffering from it, what's the result of that for them?
Well, yeah, good question, because it's really insidious. I mean, it's everything from people thinking you mean one thing,
mm-hmm.
spending time and effort producing some sort of output or some sort of outcome. And then as a leader going, well, that's not what I meant,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all that wasted effort. And then the frustration of the person who did the work and the frustration of the leader because he or she was expecting results and they didn't get them. And, you know, there's all of that. And then there's even, you know, people not being clear about priorities and spending their time on something that isn't what's the most urgent need of the leader. I actually listen, you know, very differently now that I wrote this book than I did before I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how many times a leader will, you know, give some sort of direction or say that they would like something done. And when I'm present and listening to it, you know, I'm able to then coach them afterwards and kind of replay what I heard and help them see how that was not crisp. Right. You know, I'm not even clear what you want. And I was listening from, you know, the view of a clarity seeker.
Sure.
So
that makes sense. And obviously talking about, you know, personal performance is one thing, but what about organizational performance? You know, how can clarity help improve a total organization or a total organization's performance?
You know, I mean, it's on multiple levels, and it does start with individuals wishing to be clear and seeking clarity, mm-hmm. both on both ends of the information spectrum, giving and receiving. But I think one of the biggest downfalls I see are organizations that aren't being clear about how they're actually performing and how they're not clear about the actual current state and making a lot of assumptions about leaders are notoriously in a bad position in that, you know, they're not on the front lines. They're not close to the work. They can become closer to the work, but they wouldn't be able to be immersed in the work at the front lines, or they wouldn't be leaders.
Right.
So there's a sweet spot, and finding that sweet spot is critical for a leader to be able to make good decisions, spend money wisely, figure out what needs to be done to get to the next level of the strategy that someone's trying to go for. And you have to understand the current state. And I think a lot of people, back to fear, a lot of people, even if they're not overtly aware of this, are afraid to know the truth because then they have to do something about it.
Right.
And it's in the truth. Can be ugly, you know, I find it still, even if it's ugly, I find it liberating to know what you're dealing with and then be able to do something about it.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of leaders, I understand there's a lot going on. There's a lot of pressures, you know, and knowing yet one more thing that needs your time and attention is difficult. Mm-hmm. But what happens if you don't know about the truth is that you will never have the full set of cards to play.
Right, right. I might upset a few people here, but when you were talking just now, it made me think of when I see, any kind of KPIs where organizations are using yellow, they have green, they have yellow, and then they have red. And in the yellow area, it's kind of like, it's almost like that creates or allows you to have or not allow you to have clarity, because are we on track or are we off track? Well, we're somewhere in the middle. Well, what does that really mean? Right. And so I think that it almost it connects to what you're talking about with, do we really want to know where we currently are, or do we want to pretend like we know?
Yeah. You know, the whole thing about targets and people being on or off target, just, there's just so much. We could have a whole podcast just on that.
Right. Right.
So we got rid of yellow in our firm about, I want to say like 8 years ago. And it was when I heard Alan Mulally speak, and he was very clear. There is no yellow. You're either on or off target.
That's right.
And you know, the thing is, off target is usually in an uninformed or an organization that hasn't been through thinking about human psychology and how to get performance out of people. Yellow, you know, off target's bad, you know, and, you know, people, you know, feel like they're being maligned and sometimes being overtly punished and sometimes losing their jobs,
sure.
You know, over being, so no wonder people don't like to be off target.
That's right.
But off target in a lean environment means, all right, we got a gap. We've got to do something about it. You know, if there's not emotion laced with it, people aren't losing their jobs over it.
That's exactly right.
And so, so that red and green, I loved the transition, and I love walking into new clients where they're using yellow and saying, we're going to take away that yellow, okay?
Right, right.
Yeah. No orange, no yellow,
right.
Red and green.
I was going to say, I have a friend that that said that you need to earn yellow. So work long enough until you understand what that really means for your organization. And there's, again, clarity around what that is. But start with red and green, and then, you know, move in the future, just to have people relax that are getting upset that we're talking about taking away their yellow. You know, maybe in the future it's something you could add back in, but
I haven't considered that. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know. We'll see. I'll noodle on that. That's a good one. And can I just mention one other
kind
of related thing to the yellow is a guideline versus a standard. And, you know, a lot of times we see organizations that call things standards, but they're not standards, they're guidelines. Mm-hmm. And a guideline is not a standard. You know, a standard, you're either meeting it or you're not.
Right.
A guideline is very situational. And what I think a lot of organizations kind of hide behind guidelines because they're afraid to commit to standards, or they feel standards are restrictive. Mm-hmm. And they aren't restrictive. I mean, you can have five standards to meet five different variations of a condition, and they're still five unique standards, and they still are a hard line in the sand. You're either on or off target, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
And so the guideline standard thing I find fascinating as well.
Yeah, for sure. So good conversation. Again, another one that we could probably talk about forever, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But when it comes, you know, coming back to clarity, what would you say gets in the way of clarity? What creates, what are the barriers that are causing us to not have clarity?
Mm-hmm. Well, fear for sure. Fear is probably the number one reason that I see a lot of people not seek it and not necessarily convey it. But there's also, on the conveyance part of it, there's also just a lack of awareness. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the main reasons why I wrote the book, was to just heighten awareness, first and foremost, that it's even a thing, it's even a problem. And then, you know, offer some how-tos for remedying a situation where there's a lot of ambiguity. But fear is definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. Another one is time pressures. Clarity takes time. You have to think a little differently than you do when you're, you know, giving out some kind of ambiguous message to people. You have to think more intentionally and be more purposeful and choosing your words more carefully. There's all of that extra effort in being clear. So sometimes the time crunch gets in people's way. Mm-hmm. And that's a big one, actually.
Sure.
And then there's actually the kind of sociopathic version of ambiguity, where it's intentionally deceiving and wanting to deceive. And that's, you know, that's a pretty bad thing, to get that sociopathic end of the spectrum. And then a little bit less sociopathic, but not as innocent as just not being aware, is intentional ambiguity, but smart intentional ambiguity. And so what gets in the way in clarity there is that it really is risky to tell the truth. And what I mean by that is, let's say a company is looking into a possible acquisition. You know, you don't necessarily want to broadcast that to the whole world, you know, or you'll lose your competitive edge in the negotiation. And things like that you sometimes have to be intentionally ambiguous and not throw it out there. So I do worry a lot every time I say that term, that people are going to pick up and go, well, I was being intentionally ambiguous, and use it as an excuse for not telling the truth when they really should be telling the truth. So use that wisely, listeners.
Okay. That makes sense. So obviously those are some reasons why, you know, leaders struggle with clarity, a couple good ones there. And you have a few more in the book, right? Or did we cover all of them?
I actually have quite a few in the
book.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
They're less common than what I really think, that time and fear are the mm-hmm. big ones. And you know, some of it could be history but it still comes back to fear. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really interesting. I heard a long, long, long time ago this philosophy that there are only two pure human emotions: love and fear. Hmm. And everything else emanates from love and fear. And that has proven to feel really right to me in life. And so, you know, I think if an organization wants to create a culture of clarity, they've really got to address the fear issue that is there, and, you know, and get clear on why people, root cause analysis, you know, why are people fearful?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just bringing baggage from another job or having a different boss, you know, like I did, and it shaped how I behaved with her. And I took that into my next job.
Right.
And, you know, had to find a boss finally that he was like, I want to know everything, you know, you know, don't you hide anything from me. I don't care how ugly it is.
Right.
You know, that type of thing.
So what would you say for someone that maybe is in an organization where they do feel like they have a bit of fear, they can feel that, and they're maybe holding back a bit? What would you say to someone, you know, what should they do? What should their first steps be?
Well, I think one thing that's risky for people to think about, but one thing that's necessary is testing whether or not the fear is well-grounded or not. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times it is baggage we're bringing into a situation. I was coaching a woman on problem solving in the South, and she was a brand new boss. And, you know, it was a very kind of genteel environment in the culture of this organization. And she was really resisting this one thing that she was supposed to be doing in order to move her problem forward and get to a solution or a countermeasure. And it was going and getting cross-functional involvement. And she was really good at doing her homework, but she just, week after week we'd meet and she wouldn't have done the work to start getting the stakeholders involved. And I finally got to the root of it, that she was programmed from a previous boss who didn't want her to reach out. He felt that that was a sign of weakness, actually, to engage stakeholders and engage people in helping make a decision, and that you should be able to do it yourself. And so that colored everything. And so I encouraged her to go and talk with her boss. And that's one form of testing, is just having a conversation.
Right.
And it turns out he was really cool with it. I mean, he was like, yeah, let's get the stakeholders involved. But she was carrying around this burden from a previous experience that she had to do it. And the other way to test is a real test. Like, you just do something and see what happens. And you know, sometimes it depends on what the conversation is about, on whether or not that's too high a risk to do, and maybe a conversation about wanting to operate in more of a clear environment is the safer path.
Sure.
PDSA, PDCA.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. And even if it doesn't work out the way that you expect it, you know, what did you learn? And you go back and try something else, right?
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah, you gotta test to see whether the fear is really legit. Now, if you test it and you find out it really is legitimate, then you have a whole nother set of possibilities that you have to consider. And that's the beauty about getting clarity.
Sure.
You know, is that now you have more possibilities. And, you know, it could be, you know, for some people, it may not be an environment they want to stay in. Mm-hmm. And they may want to find an organization where clarity is honored and encouraged.
That's right. So, right. No, that makes sense for sure. So if someone wanted to find your book, Clarity First, where would they go?
Amazon or any of the major booksellers, you know, Barnes & Noble online. All the major ones. We have some on our website, which is tkmg.com. The Karen Martin Group is what it used to be.
Okay.
tkmg.com. On the book page, there's some downloads. You can download the first chapter for free. There's an online assessment you can take to, you know, to basically look at the five different P's that I talk about in the book for the different areas of clarity, which is purpose, priorities, process, performance, and problem solving.
Love it.
So there's some free things that people can download. And then also our webinar page, I gave, especially when we launched the book, I gave a lot of webinars on the subject. So, and I went through every piece separate webinars, so people can look at those as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I poked around on your website earlier, and obviously you speak at different places as well. So going to your speaker page and being able to hear you speak and just the opportunities to bring you in for conferences and things like that is another great opportunity that's available on your website.
Yeah, so, thank you. And it's been really fun making that transition to being a virtual keynoter.
Right. You know, this last keynoter. Year has been crazy. But I think for a lot of organizations that, you know, we're doing the conferences, every conference that I've been on they've done a really good job at utilizing the virtual tools that are out there and making the conferences very interactive. And it's very easy for a speaker. It's easy for someone that's attending. I don't know what your experience has been.
Yeah, I mean, I was such a doubting Thomas about the whole moving everything to virtual, including things like mapping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, value stream mapping, really? Not going to the Gemba?
Right.
Not being able to see where the work is done? No, you know, I mean, I was just like, there's no way. But I've really come to embrace it. You know, I would very much like to do them in person again. I still think it's better. It's certainly a lot easier as a facilitator to be able to see everyone around a table or against a wall or, you know, wherever you are, and see the body language real time and things like that that you miss on camera. But but it's been far more successful than I thought it would ever be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think
you're seeing the same thing, eh?
Oh, absolutely. And I think things are continuing to develop. I talked with Jeff Leiker a few weeks ago about the virtual reality work that he's doing with an organization, and they did complete video of a plant, and then he does this virtual training where everybody puts on their virtual reality goggles, and then they join him in the plant, and they actually do a Gemba walk in the plant using virtual reality. So it's interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
Toyota,
I'm in Dallas now, and Toyota has, in the Plano area, they've got a virtual reality I don't know. I don't think it's open to the public. I'm not sure, but you put on the goggles and then you are actually on a line.
Yes.
And you're experiencing the line as it goes. It's fascinating. Yes. I love it.
Yeah. I'm excited to dabble in a little bit of that and part of some of those in the near future. So,
yeah, it's pretty cool technology.
Absolutely. So you mentioned your website, but if anybody wants to get a hold of you, is that the best way to go, right to your website?
Yeah, that way. And then also we have a new online learning arm, tkmgacademy.com. So they can also get to us through that as well.
Very nice. What's offered through your academy?
Yeah, there are courses that are, we're trying to do the whole range so that everyone has a place in the academy from, you know, basic process type of work and understanding what value and waste are and the kind of basics all the way up to leader standard work, strategy deployment, value stream transformation, things like that. So there are 1 to 1.5 hour courses, packed content into these 1 to 1.5 yes. hour courses. And they're taught not just by me, by, you know, a whole team of instructors. And it's been going really well. We're in 33 countries as of today.
Wow,
so
that's great.
It's really been, and we launched April 2nd of 2020. So in the beginning of COVID.
Yeah, right in the middle.
Yeah. It was scary.
Yeah, I bet. Well, it's been great to have you on as a guest, Karen. Love the book. I'm excited to read it. So love hearing about the book. Love all of the ideas that we talked about, and even the barriers I think about, you know, I'm thinking for myself, what are those things that I'm holding back on? And, so I'm excited to dive into your book and read a little bit more, but thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It was really a fun conversation.
Thanks. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to an episode of the Lean Solutions Podcast. If you haven't done so already, please be sure to subscribe. This way you'll get updates as new episodes become available. If you feel so inclined, please give us a review. Thanks so much. Take care.